Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Division of Transplantation, where patients' lives are enhanced by a renowned transplant program known for innovation and excellence in kidney, liver, and pancreas transplants. For more information, 1-800-492-5538. You can also go to steinershow.org and click on their banner, and all the information will be there about all the things that University of Maryland Medical Systems has. We're going to be talking this hour about transforming Baltimore in terms of transforming our schools. Our schools, many of them, are in horrendous shape. There hasn't been a new school built in Baltimore in 50 years?
Decades.
But it's not just the building of a new school. It's also that the conditions in many of these schools are deplorable. I mean, I can give you a short story as I introduce the panel. And it really struck me because that day, and this actually happened a few years ago, but it sticks in my brain because it's happened over and over again in different ways. I had visited a school out in Baltimore County to talk to the kids in northern Baltimore County, and was just looking around the campus and was amazed by the beauty of the campus and the condition of the school and the athletic fields and everything else that I saw. And then that next day, I came to speak at Douglas High School on the west side of town, right by Mondawmin Shopping Center on Gwynns Falls Parkway. And I remember sitting with a group of students, about 40 students. We were talking about some issues they wanted to talk about, and I was lecturing the class. We were talking. And I was sitting up on the windowsill for a minute, and I remember I turned around and looked outside. And I looked outside down at what was supposed to be the tennis courts. And the day before, I had done the same thing at this other school and seen these immaculate tennis courts where with brand-new nets and everything was manicured. And you look out at Douglas's tennis courts, and they were no nets or they were rotten nets, and the ground was cracked, the pavement was cracked, and things were growing out between it. And I said to myself, what do students think when they look out the fence and look out the window and see this? And one kid we talked about, he said, well, I look out that window, and I think they don't care about us. And they really said a lot, and the movements have been building around that. So this hour, we'll be talking this hour with Bibi Verdery, who is the Education Reform Director at the ACLU here in Maryland, who's been doing this battle for a long time. Bibi, good to have you back in the studio with us.
Thank you, Mark.
Joining us for the first time, Terrell Williams, who is a teacher at Hollabird Academy.
Thank you.
A math teacher for special ed kids, is that right?
Absolutely.
Good to have you in the studio, Terrell. Brianna Wills is with us. She's a senior at the Baltimore Freedom Academy.
Hey, how are you?
Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Great school, wonderful principal.
Yes.
One of my favorite places. Donald Mannequin is with us. He's a partner in Seawall Development who has been involved in these issues for many years and knows what it means to put a building back together. And Donald, good to have you.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Studio. Join us here at 410-319-8888. Bibi, let me just turn to you first. I mean, because you've been at the ACLU kind of pushing this for many years. This has been part of the raison d'etre for your work in a bunch of years and trying to change things around the school system. Tell us, give us a bit of the heart and soul in what's happening with this movement and where you are now.
Thank you, Mark. Yes, we have launched a new campaign we're calling Transform Baltimore, Build School, Build Neighborhoods, and we have representatives with the different groups here tonight. We're trying to build a major campaign to have the city and the state take seriously the deteriorating conditions of school buildings and to find solutions using examples of what has worked in other cities and states. We're going after the entire $2.8 billion plan. We think it can be done. We are proposing that we'll talk a little bit more in the hour about what has happened in Greenville, South Carolina, where they have rebuilt new or renovated all of their schools within 5 years using innovative financing and some of the revenue sources that we might need to get there. But this new coalition is calling on the city and state to get serious about a big think-out-of-the-box plan now.
And I want to talk to our people who go to these schools every day in the studio now, and I welcome you both to the studio.
Thank you.
And I know, you know, I've visited your school, Brianna,
many
times. and a lot of great learning goes on there.
It does.
You know, but the school could use
renovation. Major renovation. I mean, when I come to school, I love being around my teachers. I love getting any information that they're willing to give me. And the students, I love my students. But you can't tell from the building that we're in. I mean, I come to school and I have to worry about tile falling on my head if I'm in class or faulty wiring. That's not fair to us as students. It feels like we're unappreciated, and how are we asked to learn and be something other than the statistics if we don't have a building that actually functions like it's supposed to? I have asthma. I spend a couple days out of school each year because of bad ventilation, and I don't think that's fair when I want to go to school and I want to be there, but because of a situation that could be fixed, not being fixed, it causes me to miss out on my education. I don't think that's right for us. And not only me, it's a couple of students that I know personally that have really bad health issues. And like I said, they love school. We love our teachers. And it's not fair to us.
So do you, is this a topic of conversation that actually takes place among students?
Yeah, we talk about it all the time because we have to be there. We're dealing with it hands-on every single day, and it's kind of hard. I mean, some kids get frustrated and they want to transfer, but you don't want to leave the teachers because they're, I mean, we have really good teachers in Baltimore City Schools. We have really good teachers, a really good staff, really good administrators, and like you said, I have one of the best principals in the city, but you couldn't tell from looking on the outside or just being a visitor visiting our school, just walking through the halls. You wouldn't be able to see that a lot of great things happen. A lot of great people are here.
Terrell, again, welcome to the show. So tell us about what your experiences are in the system and where you are at Hallibird.
Well, first, I want to say I am surprised that you could see out the window to see the condition of the tennis courts, because many of our windows are very hazed, has that brown haze that sort of prevent kids from seeing what's happening out with nature. I enjoy being a teacher. It is, prior to teaching, I was an executive, and I passed that alone, and I decided that I wanted to help children. But I tell you, it makes it very difficult to tell kids you care about them, you care about their future, and your house and the building that doesn't look like their future. It looks much like the past. And I believe we can do more. I believe we must do more.
What is it like at Hallibird?
Like Brianna said, it's a wonderful learning institution. I mean, we have wonderful instructors doing great work. The conditions of the building, it's not very favorable. I mean, my own office has many cracks in the floor where the cement structure is absolutely cracking below my feet. I have to put carpets down. I attempt to use academic carpets that display academic literature so that I can teach kids using the rugs. The restrooms are always smelly. Unfortunately, we have rust. We have issues of mold and mildew. And we attempt to mask those things with deodorizers. And sometimes, unfortunately, we have to use sprays because we have a severe rodent problem. So there are many different scents that our kids picked up. So most are not very favorable. I feel we have to do something.
And Donald Madigan, we bring you in the conversation before we open the phones here, 410-319-8888. You've been redeveloping places that you think wouldn't be redeveloped, and there's a lot of workforce housing for teachers and others. And you know buildings.
One, it's an honor to be here, an honor to be here with you all to listen to this story. This is an economic development issue. This is the future. This young woman sitting next to me right now is the next generation of leaders. There isn't a business that doesn't build its buildings to meet the needs of the employees. Heating and air conditioning systems work, electrical works, plumbing works, all the pieces that allow you to do the business that you're doing in the building have to work. I mean, it's just what's an expected product. And so if we're building the next generation of young adults who are going to go into the workforce and go off to college and become the next generation of leaders, the environment that we build for them shouldn't be any different than it would be in an office building or a manufacturing building. It's got to be an absolutely terrific place by which to – I don't want you to think for a minute you're a product. But in reality, the school system is producing beginning in pre-K and graduating in the 12th grade, a product, and a product that's got to be successful for themselves and for the community at large. And if we're not, if they're not in buildings that really are academic centers of excellence that minimally have great heating and air conditioning systems and great electrical service, that's just this, that's a starting point. I mean, it needs to have an environment by which teachers can are recruited and retained and grow, and that students have this incredible opportunity to be the success that they want to be.
410-319-8888 is the number here. We're going to talk in more specifics about what we can do, what's proposed about what's happening, how we get to this place where our school's already built and why they're in the condition they're in now. But we want to hear what you think in your school, in your child's school, where you work, what you think we need to do. But we'd love to hear your stories about your own schools if you'd like to share them at 410-319-8888 with our panel. And Leon, you're on the air.
Good evening, Mark. Good evening, Anthony.
Good evening.
Mark.
Anthony's not here, but go ahead.
Our schools are in bad condition. One, mainly because the maintenance people who are supposed to be doing the maintenance don't do anything. They stay down and ask it and just stay there all day. Look, I've worked in school for over 38 years. I was with the New York City Board of Education, and then I came to Loyola University as construction project manager. There's nothing in these schools that cannot be repaired. I have been inspecting the schools from Governor O'Malley, Sheila Dixon, and things that I find in these schools are ridiculous. Imagine you go into a bathroom and there's no toilet paper, no hand towels. I went to one school that the pool been closed for 3 years because of a 12-cent nut. I opened the electrical compartment to the pool pump, and the wires were just sticking out there. So there's nothing that they can tell me that cannot be fixed.
All right, hold on. Let me throw this out here. Is it as simple as, from your perspective, of what Leon's saying, or is that simple and partly, and maybe more that we're not seeing?
Well, I like to say, I hear what the caller is saying, but I tell you, just in the building that I'm in this year, in the first 2 months of school, we've had a sink to fall off the wall. We have had a sewer system in the boys' bathroom to explode, which caused us to close the bathroom for several days to have construction workers come in. We've had the girls' restroom, who had to be completely renovated because it was absolutely falling apart. The doors could not be closed, so a young lady couldn't go in the restroom and have privacy. There was no doors. We've had pest control to come in because we had a serious problem with pests. While I can say maybe a couple times I've come in and there was no toilet paper, but I tell you, every single day I walk in, I am walking on a floor that has many cracks. I see doors that are coming off the hinges. I see mold and mildew and rust in bathrooms every day.
Brianna, go ahead.
I understand what the caller is saying, and I definitely agree that those are issues. But it's only so much that the maintenance people can do. They can't control the ceiling falling in on you or trying to put the sinks back up against the wall. They can't control the faulty wiring. These are issues that need money. And, I mean, I understand where he's coming from, but those are little issues compared to having bars on your windows and broken doors that don't open because they are so old and no one has ever kept them up like they were supposed to be kept up, and there's no funding to fix it. I mean, it's only so much that maintenance people can do.
Baby?
The situation we have now is about $60 million a year are spent on Baltimore City schools at max, really more $45 to $55 million total. And yet, we've documented through various studies that we have a $2.8 billion need. So what this Transform Baltimore campaign is trying to focus on is how do we get from $60 million a year up to $2.8 billion? It's a daunting task. But the good news is that other cities have done this. They've taken their existing capital funding and borrowed against it, just like a mortgage. So you borrow money up front and you use your existing money coming in, the $60 million Baltimore City Schools has access to, and you pay off the loan. You pay off the debt service of the bonds. So Baltimore City could right now, with the support of the city and the state, borrow $1 billion and get nearly 50% into what is needed for city schools. That's tearing some buildings down and rebuilding them because they're not even worth rebuilding. Electrical work, plumbing, so we have drinking water that kids can actually drink, air conditioning, science labs, things that are that the kids need for a modern academic life. So we think with this innovative financing, you could get $1 billion into the need. And then after that, we are going to need some new revenue. But it's just got to be done. The status quo right now of saying, well, let's just right now the funding will allow for like one renovation a year. So 1 year you might get Dunbar, and then you'll get Leith Walk. And next year we're going to have Waverly, which will be exciting, the first new building in decades. But it's one by one. It's going to take, you know, 100 years to get there, and then they'll be falling down again. So we're looking for innovative, do-it-now kind of solutions like they've done in Greenville, South Carolina.
Let me jump into the caller for a moment, because the investment that's going to be made up front to rebuild the schools will create an operating opportunity for the cleaning people, the janitors, because they're not going to be worrying about the ceilings falling in, or the electrical service, or the wire, or the mold. They're not treating, they're not reacting to the problem. They now have an incredible opportunity to be proactive in maintaining a facility that's new and wired and heated and air conditioned as it should be, and creates this learning environment. The opportunity to maintain a building like that is going to make the custodial and the janitors and the maintenance folks feel that they are literally a part of the learning environment and not just responsible to sort of fix the problem that exists at the moment.
Should we go back to the phones? I want to come back to pursue this idea. And I think we have several delegates calling in. Heather Mazier has just called in, and Delegate Sean Tarant is going to come to their calls in 2 seconds. Let's get some other callers in here at 410-319-8888. Morning, you're on the air.
Yes, I want to say that the school problems is like a four-leg stool. One leg is for maintenance, and I truly do not believe that they are doing their job. I agree with the first caller. The second leg is the city has not given adequate money to maintain the facilities. The other leg is the parents. The parents have to fundraise. They have to be involved. They have to get in there and do things in the building. And finally, the children have to be taught to respect the building. If you could see some of the grossness that the children do, you know, they're leaving the food laying around, flushing toilets with their foot, slamming doors. You know, we need change all the way around. But definitely that maintenance department, when you talk about a sink falling off the wall, that's a $4.99 piece of metal that you screw into the wall and hang the sink back up. Everyone has to do more.
Well, we've had two calls like this now. Let me just throw this out here to everybody in the room, because I think it's an important issue. It's also kind of a popular way of that people think about the issue. We're going to come to Billy Moses and get to two delegates, Mazier and Sean, but I want to throw this out. I mean, the issue of maintenance and the issue of students respecting or not respecting schools and of people being involved is an issue. And I think that's I think that is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think especially the two people who are involved in the schools day to day would, as you just said,
agree.
Yeah, agree. There's
but
an issue.
Isn't that an issue in any business, Mark?
But it's an issue in any business. So to what degree are those the issues, and to what degree are the issues larger? In other words, when I walk through a building with you, Donald Manikin, and when I was with some guy who wanted, we were together, and he wanted to buy this building to work with kids in the inner city, and he had a great program, but you looked at the building and you went, well, you know, this is going to take like $1 million to fix it. Whatever you said that day, it was going to take a huge amount of money to fix this building because the infrastructure is just falling apart. How much of it is the lack of maintenance and care, and how much of it is the fact that our buildings are just falling apart?
I think it's the chicken or the egg. The buildings fall apart because there's not the resources to maintain them on a regular basis. I mean, in the real estate development business, you get preventive maintenance contracts on heating and air conditioning systems, on plumbing systems, on paving, on roofs. I mean, to the minute that the school system is without those funds, something gets sacrificed. And so we're not sacrificing books, and we're not going to sacrifice teacher salaries. We're going to sacrifice the ultimate maintenance of the building. And so for decades, the buildings have been, you know, for lack of resources, have been left to fall apart. And if the roofs start to fall apart over a period of time and you're not maintaining them, then they're going to cost you a fortune 10 or 15 or 20 years down the road. Same thing with heating and air conditioning systems. If boilers aren't maintained, they're going to cost you more down the road. But I think the problem has been there's the imbalance of operating funds to be able to do the work that the school system wants to do to be able to keep the buildings in great condition.
Brianna, then Bibi, and then we'll go back to the
I just want to say, speaking as a senior in high school, having to deal with Baltimore's public school system for my entire life, since I've been in school.
Right.
since I've been in school.
Right.
But why should we take care of things that are already broken, if that makes any sense? Why should we be looked to try to keep up a building that it's on its knees already and that is falling down on us as we speak? Every day that I'm in school, I feel that I'm not appreciated as a student, and my education must not mean much to the city because I'm in the environment that I'm in. So why should I take care of it? I mean, I feel like kicking some stuff that is already broken. When I look at the ceiling and I see holes all over the ceiling, or I go into the girls' bathroom and I can only use one stall when it's four stalls in the girls' bathroom, and it's even worse in the boys' bathroom. So, I mean, why should we take care of things that are already broken? It's like when you're getting a Christmas present every December or a birthday present. When you get that new toy, that new camera, the new laptop, the new bike, whatever it is that's new, you want to take care of it. You want to show it off. You want to flaunt it. But as soon as that iPod gets a cracked screen or that bike wheel falls off, you leave it in the garage. Because what else am I supposed to do with this until I get a new one?
Or learn how, or fix it.
I would just say that the state of Maryland and the construction agency that oversees school construction has watched Baltimore City rather closely over the last number of years. And I think that they would acknowledge that the city school system is doing a much better job now. I'm sure they're not perfect. I'm sure at every school there would be complaints about they wish things would be a little bit better. But I think that that is not the major problem. The major problem is you haven't put the money into doing the maintenance to start with. And so you can put Band-Aids on all day long, and then something's going to give on the other side. I'd like to also give sort of the opposite example of this,
yes,
which is some federal stimulus money went into Commodore John Rogers last year, about $1 million, not a huge amount of money for what the building needs. But the principal made good decisions about how that money was used and opened the building up. There's a lot more light there. There's painting. They fixed the auditorium. And the way the students and teachers reacted to that building has been radical. Now people want to get into Commodore John Rogers because the way the building looks and the welcoming of it and the sprucing up of it has made the community feel very differently. And the teachers are reporting that it's having an academic impact. The kids feel valued. They feel excited. They feel that they're in a place that values them. So you can look at the other side, too. What happens when you fix a building up, and how do the students and the teachers respond?
Let me go to the phones here and bring in and Billy and Moses. Hold on, Lewis. We're going to come to your calls. I do want to get the delegates in, see what they had to say. We're being joined. Delegate Heather Mazier is with us. And Heather, welcome. Good to have you on the show again.
Thank you, Mark. It's great to join you, and very much appreciate the topic and the guests that you have this evening.
So you wrote an op-ed with Tom Wilcox on October 26th about this, and talk a bit about what you're suggesting needs to be done.
Well, Bibi walked through a lot of the approach that that we laid out in the op-ed, and the ACLU and the Baltimore Education Coalition have all been great partners. I know that you have a guest from Holabird there as well, and that actually sparked my initial interest as a member of the Appropriations Committee. I was touring Holabird this summer and was definitely concerned about the conditions there. You had these amazing children with hope and desire to learn, and they were so excited about educational opportunities, but they were equally depressed about the status of the conditions around them, and they asked us for us to really think seriously about ways to help them. And their librarian and their principal invited me back with the ACLU and the Baltimore Education Coalition to sit down and talk about this. And as we started digging into more about these public-private partnerships, not only saw it as an opportunity for bringing in new resources, but also for strengthening the revitalization of neighborhoods, because schools are the anchors in our communities. And in some places where these P3s have come into fruition, we have benefited by bringing in new revenue sources by using the school gymnasiums and auditoriums, the libraries, as a local real estate asset for bringing in resources for the community. Mm-hmm. There have been programs where daycare centers have been co-located in these new schools. And the benefit of being able to reconstruct these facilities in big batches rather than one at a time in a Band-Aid approach here and there creates an environment where you can bring to scale a lot of innovation and economies of efficiency by tackling this problem all at once and bringing 21st century learning centers to all of our communities in Maryland.
So I'm curious, I'm going to take a short break here. I'm going to get Delegate Sean Tarrant in line as well, and we will go right to Billy and Moses and Lewis, who have called in, get their thoughts on the schools. 410-319-8888 is the number here. What I'd like to explore when we come back is, say we passed a referendum like this, what's the downside? We're borrowing $1 billion, and they have $60 million, let's say in Baltimore City, they have $60 million dedicated to maintaining schools, which is nothing, a drop in the bucket. But if we have $1 billion, how do we pay that back? I mean, how is that going to work? So we'll talk about that when we return and more. So stay with us, 410-319-8888. Sean Tarrant, we'll get your voice in the air here. And we'll also go to our callers who've been waiting very patiently, Moses and Billy and Lewis. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. What we're learning here in the program today is that there may be a way to really begin to change the nature of our schools, how they look, their physical plans look, to change what our students and teachers go into every day, that the money could be there. The question is, why isn't there? How do we get it there? And that this would be a beginning of something. And we're going to talk about those possibilities and what we as citizens can do about that. We're here with B.B. Verdery, who is Education Reform Director of the ACLU of Maryland, who's been fighting this battle for as long as I know. I've been on the airwaves along 18 years now. Donald Manikin is partner in Seawall Development. Brianna Wills is a senior at Baltimore Freedom Academy. Terrell Williams is a teacher at Hollibert Academy. Delegate Heather Mazier is on the phone with us. And let's get also Delegate Sean Tarrant to join us here. Sean, welcome. Good to have you with us from District 40.
Yeah, hi. How you doing?
I'm really well, brother. Good to have you on the air with us. And you were going to say something, Brianna?
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you to both the delegates because we need more people like them to support us.
So, Sean, let me ask you a political question since I got you. You called in.
a political question for a politician.
How rare. But so...
I think Steffi Rawlings Blake is going to be our next mayor.
A smart politician. You've always have been, Sean. But the question is, I asked this during the break, is if this is that simple to take $60 million that the city school system has to leverage that in a bond for $1 billion to rebuild the schools and use that money to pay back the loan, then what's the problem? What's the sticking point? Why aren't we doing it?
Well, I would say that, you know, it's very ambitious. I do remember last year I was trying to get our bonds enhanced so that we can get more money for the schools, and the Appropriations Committee felt that we were trying to borrow too much, and they would not allow us to because it had to go in front of the legislature. And so it was a bill that I was carrying, and so it just wasn't something that we could just readily do because we had the money. We could felt that we could make good It's one of those things where they feel as if they don't want the school system or the city to put itself in a situation where potentially other services might be cut, or that we would have entirely too much focus on the schools, which I feel personally there's never enough focus on Baltimore City Public Schools, because we have a very long way to go before we get in the position as other counties are, as far as having new schools and having schools that are places where we want our children to go to and also be educated in.
So, and we were talking about, go ahead.
Can I just ask, one of the things that I look at is we spend millions of dollars patching up these structures a year, number one. And we do things like bring in bottled water for every single school, supplies cups for every single student every single year. What would happen if we reinvest those dollars, fix up the schools, and we would not have to spend millions of dollars to patch them up, and we could have our kids drink water from the fountain instead of the big 5-gallon jug?
I think you're absolutely right.
Go ahead, Vivian.
I agree with Delegate Tarrant that I think it's one point of resistance, and I don't think it's resistance that we can't get beyond. We're building a campaign. We need to build the political will that insists that the schools must be fixed. And then people who know how to finance deals will come forward and say, yes, this is how we can do it. But it is ambitious. It's not what Maryland is used to thinking about. Now, $250 million a year in Delegate Missouri's county, that's what they spend every year on school construction. Baltimore is not used to that. It's not used to asking for it. But in Greenville, South Carolina, by borrowing the money up front and then paying off the debt over 25 years, a University of North Carolina researcher found that they saved $1 billion just in deferred costs because they're doing it now as opposed to trickling out over 25 years when they would otherwise be fixing their schools.
The other piece of it that's when you invest the kind of money that is being programmed to invest, you're going to get much smarter mechanical systems, which are going to cost you less on utility costs. You're going to get much smarter lighting, which is going to cost you less. You're going to get greener buildings, which are going to cost you less than you had before. So, you know, if you were worried about the ongoing maintenance, the maintenance costs of these buildings are significantly less having been rebuilt into the 21st century than they are having been built in the 1950s, 1940s, 1930s.
I want to get a couple of citizens calling in, parents, and see what they're saying, who are calling in, and then I'll come back to kind of where is the community political will to push this to make it happen? What has to happen, and how will it work economically as well? 410-319-8888. Billy in Columbia, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's deplorable here with Douglas High School, while in Washington, D.C., in Anacostia, where you have the Frederick Douglass home over 150 years old that's better maintained than the Douglass High School in Baltimore. I think it's embarrassing. What needs to happen, I think, you have events, you have sporting events. I know the state called the shots, but somehow, some way, Baltimore needs some sort of new tax base in order to finance these the new schools. I mean, D.C.'s doing it. You have a few old schools that are now totally renovated. And I know the tax base is a little different down there than Baltimore, but, you know, I think it's, you know, pretty much the politicians, you know, the will of the politicians. If they can do it, and both with Baltimore City schools, they can do it, starting with Douglas. And thanks for taking my call. Listen to you guys.
Billy, I appreciate the call. Let's get a couple of callers in just to get some thoughts and come back to wrestling this with
Mark,
our panel.
Can I answer that, Mark?
Would you, 1 second. So let me just a couple of callers and you can jump right in.
Okay.
And Kim, in your car, you're on the air. Kim, could you turn your radio off?
In your car, you're on the air.
So we can hear you?
Hi, Mark.
Go ahead, Kim.
Listen, I'm riding in my car. I probably shouldn't be talking on the phone, but I am just, this situation just makes me sick to my stomach. I told the lady to answer the phone. I live in Carroll County. My kids go to Westminster High School, and we are blessed to have a clean school to go to and the whole nine yards. It just makes me sick to hear this. I had no idea that this situation is this bad. We pay taxes in this state for the dumbest stuff. And I don't care that I live in Carroll County. I don't care that my kids don't go to Baltimore City. I would be more than happy to pay more taxes for these children to have a place to go to school. This is our future. And that precious child that's sitting in that room with you, talking about how she has to be sick X number of days in school because of the deplorable conditions of that school,
yeah. Yes.
It just makes me sick. Yes. I can't believe that we can't find money somewhere. You know, I don't mean to bring up a sore subject, but that stupid Grand Prix race or whatever they had down there. I have a feeling that we could have taken some of that money and put in those schools. So anyway, forgive me for getting all upset.
No.
If anybody wants to raise some taxes, I'll be more than happy to pay.
Thank you.
Get these kids some good, a good place to go to school and healthy water to drink and everything else. So thanks for taking the call. I just needed to ventilate on
that's
that
fine,
one.
That's fine, campaign. Please ventilate with us and please drive safe. Another quick call. One more quick call, and we'll jump right back to our panel because I want to get some people have been waiting a long time to say something on this. So, Lewis, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening, Mark, WEAA, and the panel. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a 38-year-old man born and raised in the city, and I follow, you know, pretty much the methodology of it takes a village to raise a child. You know, I think
right.
that the parents really need to be more involved in the school, not only the parents, but people who actually attended these schools. Like, personally, I don't have a child that goes to school in Baltimore City Public Schools. But, you know, if the parents would take the time to go down there and actually look at some of the conditions of these facilities, you know, not only that, but see the lesson plans that's being taught with their feeding their kids in school and things like that, then they would have a say-so and a better understanding on what needs to be done. I mean, it's easy, you know, for us to try to blame the government for everything that's going wrong within these schools, and it's also easy for us to say people like Oprah Winfrey and Warren Buffett should be the ones that fund, you know, rebuilding these schools. But just imagine, you know, everyone that actually graduated from these schools, just imagine if everyone donated a dollar. You know, I mean, I think we just need to be a little bit more involved and, you know, exactly what's being taught to our kids and also the conditions in which they're supposed to learn. And I think that would help out a lot. And also, Brianna, you're doing a wonderful job.
I love you.
this is Brianna's grandfather, so I like
no,
that.
No, that's my goddad.
Your godfather. Your godfather.
Oh, I'm your grandfather, huh?
Sorry about that, Lewis. So then talk about it for a minute here. Sean, I promise you could jump in. Go ahead, Sean.
Okay. Some of the calls, and I thank them for their calls, mentioned that they'd be willing to pay more taxes so they have more money for school construction in Baltimore City. Well, there are other jurisdictions that need school money as well, and so that's the reason why when we passed the alcohol tax this past session, we were able to do it because we were promised that if we raised alcohol taxes, we'd have this one-time payout, and BB would probably have the exact number, somewhere around $5 to $9 million that we would actually get for Baltimore City school construction. And so we have done that in the past. I think that moving forward, there will be a lot of other tough things that we'll need to vote on, and a lot of people from the Baltimore City delegation will say, well, if we can get some money from these new revenues to go towards school construction, then you can get our 18 votes, because in the House of Delegates, you've got 18 votes from Baltimore City delegation, and we're all Democrats. So we've leveraged our power in Baltimore City to get money for school construction, and I think that in the upcoming session, we'll have a chance to do that again.
Well, the question I have, though, is if I'm confused, and I think my listeners are confused, so let's jump, I'm going to figure this out. The thing we're talking about that we talked about earlier, P3. So we're talking about what they did in Greensboro, North Carolina.
South Carolina.
Thank you. Greenville, South Carolina. Where they leveraged the money that was being used in school construction. We do that here, $60 million, let's say, here in Baltimore. That could leverage a $1 billion bond that then you would use the $60 million a year allotted by the city to pay that bond back over 25 years. But it would immediately begin to fix up schools in a massive way, put a lot of people to work, and change the dynamic. Then you can argue about more money with the state legislature. So the question is, why isn't that being done? If it's that simple, am I missing something?
I don't think you're missing anything. To be honest with you, this is the first time I've really had a chance to hear about this from BB herself and others. And so I think that while our governor is looking to do a big jobs bill,
this is it. We have to go to the governor and to the mayor and say, well, you're looking for a jobs bill.
Here, we have
this
one.
This is it.
So, and Heather, you wrote the article.
Yes, there are a few other points to make here. The $60 million a year that's being discussed is the operating budget, but we've talked about wanting to punch that up from additional revenue sources because we have a $2.8 billion problem. Some of it can come from those other revenue sources and the partnerships using the school that I discussed earlier, but another option that is on the table for us to consider as a state partner to the city is giving city residents the option to vote on their own referendum to have an increase in the sales tax dedicated to the municipality for this purpose. It would take enacting a law in the General Assembly to give the city that authority, and I think it's something that we should consider in this legislative session.
So, again, Bibi.
Yeah, so what we're to summarize what you're saying, Mark,
yes.
and Delegate Mazur, you could get the first $1 billion using current capital funding to pay off the debt. And in Greenville, they ran that through a nonprofit organization. So why hasn't it been done? I just think it hasn't really been studied. People are used to borrowing a certain amount of money and doing the way things are done in Maryland. But we're looking at other models. We had a huge speak out last Thursday night with over 30 schools coming and describing the kind of conditions that Mr. Williams and Brianna have described for us today. So we're building support. The current revenue working through a nonprofit would get us the first billion. And then, as Delegate Mazur just said, one other thing that we're basically promoting is, like, look at what other states are doing. In Georgia, in Florida, in Iowa, recently, just last month in Charleston, South Carolina, they're adding 1 cent to the sales tax. And that money is specifically and exclusively for school construction. So in very conservative areas of Georgia, in rural areas all the way to Atlanta, they're building hundreds and hundreds of new schools. And the reason it's so popular is it's not some tax that goes, you know, to some unknown governmental agency to waste away. It is you pay that penny on the dollar and you see new schools going up in your neighborhood that are benefiting your kids. So we think it is something that people should be looking at.
So business-wise, I mean, just turn real fast to the gentlemen in the room who both are in business, have been in business. Does this make sense to borrow this kind of money?
It makes tremendous amount of sense to leverage up money that you get anyway for capital expenses to be able to know that this is a consistent amount of money that's coming into the city and the state or the school system. And instead of doing one school at a time or a number of different boards, go take this money, leverage that up for the first $1 billion, and as we said during the break, the opportunity now in terms of how far you can stretch those dollars in this economy relative to construction costs and materials and all architects and engineers, all those things that go into making this kind of project happen, if you were going to go out in the market and buy it, this is as good a time as it is to do it.
Yes, and I want to say here in Baltimore City, we've done some very ambitious things over many, many years. Look at our harbor. Our harbor is beautiful. It is beautiful because we stretched ourselves and we found ways to get people to come into our harbor. And we're saying if we're asking our students to be ambitious, then our politicians and our leaders need to be ambitious too. And you need to our leaders need to take the step. Yes, it is an ambitious effort, but I think our kids are worth it.
And
we have to say that.
I just would add that I'd really like to see the ACLU and others energize the business community in this effort. There are some very smart people in Baltimore who understand financing and create creative ways to do this that make the process a reality, because this is what schools ought to be, and we need to move in that direction and keep focused on what's positive about the outcomes of this. It isn't about fixing toilets. I mean, that's an obvious piece. It's really about changing the atmosphere by which these young adults beginning in pre-K graduate 14 years later, giving them absolutely the best environment to learn from.
Well, that's why we're glad you're part of our campaign, Mr. Manning.
Absolutely.
You were trying to say something, Brianna, then we'll go back to the phones here.
I wanted to just say that I believe I'm going to graduate in 2012. I'll be off and gone and in college, and this matter won't be as it won't directly affect me anymore.
It won't be pressing day to day.
Yeah, it won't be pressing day to day because I won't be here to deal with it anymore. I've served my time in the city school system, so it won't directly affect me anymore. But I have a younger brother who is in elementary school. I plan to have future children or whatever, or I'll come back to Baltimore after leaving to go to school. And I believe that as students, it is our civil right to an adequate education. And how can we receive one in these environments?
Spoken like a real Freedom Academy student.
Yes.
another it's a good thing. Another delegate is called in. John Carden, welcome to the show.
Hi, Mark. How are you? It's always a pleasure to hear my fellow delegates speak so intelligently and your great panel in the city. I just wanted to say three things. I'm in my car, so I can't bring it down, so I'm going to say them as quickly as I can. And I'm one hands free. My fellow delegates should know that. Make sure that they drive safe.
Okay.
Number one is interest. Number two is transit. Number three is trust. So trust. Like you said, we got to make sure if we're going to do something like what your panelist is describing, that the citizens of Maryland trust that the money is going to really go to education and school construction. And that's one of the major obstacles, I think, that Heather and Sean may want to talk about a little bit in terms of getting people to believe that the money is actually going to be used for what it's supposed to be. Number two is interest. We got to be very careful if we do something like leveraging against bond money that we're not winding up paying, spending future dollars on interest on the bond, and just make sure that the way it's set up is done in a smart way. And the last one was about trust, interest, transit. So we actually have used this model in transit-oriented development, at least in Baltimore County. Baltimore County, which, by the way, has the second oldest stock of schools next to Baltimore City. And we've used this type of leveraging money to create bonds to build transit-oriented development to help the transit. So it's not something that's new, but I wanted to see if anybody wanted to talk about any of those things. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
I'll just make one quick point, which is that none of us is suggesting that these are solutions that are unique or only applicable to Baltimore City. The 1 cent sales tax in Georgia is embraced by 98% of the counties in Georgia, and there are hundreds of counties in Georgia. So we're not saying this could be only for Baltimore City. I think as we go into Annapolis, we need to talk about the needs of Baltimore County. We need to talk about the needs of Montgomery County. Because we're looking for new revenue to be able to leverage greater borrowing, but it's not something that's a Baltimore City only solution. There's a great need for school construction money across the state.
But it seems to me that not to mix apples and oranges here, and make sure I'm being clear for myself and for our listeners, we're saying A, that this P3 bond
by the way, Mark, is a tax exempt bond.
Which is a tax-exempt bond. That was Heather Mazier, the delegate from Montgomery County. That the city could do that, could just unilaterally do it. That we could get the $1 billion to start the schools. And then the rest of the discussion about 1 cent sale taxes and how you invest more money in school construction could be a political discussion you have
Absolutely.
With delegates in the course of sessions. But we could get this money now to start putting people to work and putting our schools back. Is that what we're saying?
Yes, the only thing that would need to happen is the current capital money that's going to school construction from the city of Baltimore and from the state of Maryland, they would need to deliver it differently. Right now, they deliver that money to the school system. They'll say, we'll put a roof on Hollabird, or we'll add a boiler to so-and-so.
So does that mean that people like Delegate Mazier and Delegate Sean Tarrant and Cardin and the rest would have to approve that before this could happen?
No, I think the mayor and the governor would have to approve it.
So it just doesn't sound that difficult.
Well, the place where there's some rub there, Mark, is that for the 6320 tax exempt bond financing to work, as we laid it out in that op-ed piece, you have, and as it worked in Greenville, you partner with a nonprofit corporation, and the city puts that money with the nonprofit corporation to leverage those bonds, and what in effect the city is doing is having a leaseback program to get 1/25 of the schools back under their control as payout of the bond accumulates. And so there's a little bit of questions, devils are in the detail, right, about figuring out collaborations with a nonprofit.
But it seems to me, Heather,
loss of control.
But we're almost out of time. But, I mean, if you have a city that has Weinberg, Casey, and Abel, there shouldn't be that deep an issue.
Exactly. And we're bringing those partners together in the city to figure that out.
We are plumb out of time. But this has been a really interesting discussion, which we'll have more of. We want to let the community know. Sorry, Michael Johnson called in, who's the city council candidate, 9th, right in. But so we couldn't get your call, Michael. We just ran out of time. And Key and the others who tried to call in. But I want to thank my panelists for being here today.
Thank you.
All the delegates, Mazira, Tarrant, Sean, always good to have you on the show. And John, who called in because he was driving around and heard us. Tara Williams, teacher
thank
at Hollabird.
Thank
Brianna
you so
Wills, senior at Baltimore Freedom Academy.
Thank you.
Pleasure to meet you and have you in the studio. My good friend Donald Manikin, good to have you in the studio as well.
Pleasure.
From Seawall Development and BB Verdery for all the work you do. I mean, you really push these issues, and we need more folks pushing like you.
Yes.
Good to have you here.
Thank you,
and
Mark.
Folks, we'll stay on this, and we'll come back to it because this is something that can be done. Let's figure out how to get it done for our city and for our students. No reason why it should not. So I'm going to remind you all the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by Urbanet Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on art, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbanLifeBaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Cricket Aronson and Justin Levy. We're engineered by Akisa Gunn. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, find out information about our guests and the work that they do, and hear new additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. Now stay tuned for Marshall Reeves Jews, who's coming to take over the microphones here at WEAA in the 7 o'clock hour. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.